Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
As one of my favorite television shows, The Office, Kevin Malone, in one of those episodes, says, you know what? It's just nice to win. And that's how it feels today as Reggie Bush is getting that 2005 Heisman Trophy back. It is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. We got a lot to dive into today. The Reggie Bush news broke this morning. We got the transfer portal continuing to buzz. On top of the transfer portal latest moves, we're also going to talk you through what we believe are the transfer portal rules for success. Everyone has a certain way of doing things. We're going to go ahead and just tell you how we think things should be done if you're calling the shots from a personnel perspective. We got your unpopular college football takes back on the show. We have takes on Alabama. Someone is predicting they are going to fall off drastically in 2024. We have another take around Ohio State's quarterback room and maybe what they won't accomplish in 2024 because of that quarterback room. And then finally, we got one of you asking us about college football's best broadcast crews. We got an unpopular take of sorts from one of y'all, which we're glad that you brought to the table, and we will unpack that one together. Can't waste too much time. Got a lot to jump into. This show, just if you're finding us right now, we're glad to have you all a part of this. College football, nothing but college football all year long. We don't do NBA. We don't do NFL. We love the NFL draft. Maybe we'll peek at that tomorrow, just kind of a hat tip sort of thing, kind of like college football's commencement ceremony, if you will. But pretty much, for the most part, all year round, college football, and we're glad to have you all a part of this, so make sure you're subscribed. Hey, let's jump right into it, man. If you are on West Coast time, then you probably woke up to this news. Reggie Bush getting that 2005 Heisman Trophy finally, at long last, returned to his possession. This is a massive win for everyone in Los Angeles, obviously. This is a massive win for Reggie Bush fans. This is a massive win for college football fans of common sense across the globe. And we thought this might be, you know, on the horizon with the way that NIL is starting to trend, but this is enormous in every sense of the word. The Heisman Trophy Trust released this statement basically saying, amid enormous changes to the college football landscape, that's the direct quote, that this ended up being the right thing to do. I don't know if right thing to do was in their statement, but that's essentially what they got down to. So this was going to happen for a number of reasons. I think one of the main reasons why this was happening and why it's happening now, it got too embarrassing for the folks that were calling the shots here. Got too embarrassing. And grown men in suits, they hate a lot of things. Embarrassment is probably in that top five when it comes to things that they hate the most, because you got college football players, current college football players, that aren't winning Heisman trophies, college football starters, dare I say some college football backups, out here driving sports cars. You got college football quarterbacks getting private jet deals, and you got Reggie Bush just chilling there, having had one of the greatest college football seasons of all time in 2005, just Heismanless. Chilling there without the Heisman, and everybody and their mother sees what's happening in the college football landscape currently, and they point back to Reggie Bush, and we're saying, seriously? Y'all are still hung up on this? And the way that we've talked about NIL and different situations with the powers that be making no sense previously, it's like if jaywalking was somehow, some way, you get caught for jaywalking and they give you some sort of fine or they take something out of your possession, maybe a certain trophy. And then within the next couple of years, they say jaywalking is 100% legal. Everyone can jaywalk. Your best friends are jaywalking. Maybe your mom's jaywalking. Everyone you know and love and you're associated with is jaywalking. You say, oh, okay, great. Well, can I have that back? They say, nope. Why not? It was illegal. Yeah, but you just saw that entire crowd of people cross the street when it didn't say walk. Sorry, those are the rules. No, those were the rules. Those rules never made sense. And now, thankfully, common sense is getting a very, very much needed dub when it comes to the college football landscape. Here's the other part of this, though, that I just, quite frankly, I have to get it out there, man. This was always the right thing to do, regardless of NIL. Regardless of NIL, this was always the right thing to do. Why? Because the Heisman Trophy is a college football award. It's not an award for community service. It's not an award for how nice you were to people. It's an award for being the best player in college football. And what we saw Reggie Bush do in that 2005 season, he was a creative player. All right, over 1,700 yards rushing. It's not during an NFL 17-game season. That's during a college football season. Had over 500 or close to 500 yards receiving as a running back. Y'all, that's ridiculous. What you saw him do out there in the Coliseum each and every Saturday was nothing short of college football poetry. I think a lot of college football fans that are right around my age, some of their earliest memories are watching Reggie Bush jump over dudes in that game against UCLA or the Fresno State game where he darn near goes and one hoop mixtape behind the back, reverses field and scores a touchdown. Like, Reggie Bush, for a lot of us, is a core college football memory. And this award, the Heisman Trophy, is a college football award. Not for being a nice guy, not for certain things you do off the field or don't do off the field. Like, it's a college football award. Getting choked up talking about the Heisman Trophy. The other part of this, zero consistency was used when it came to who was given the award and who was not given the award when we turn back the time and look at other guys that have the award. And this is not me saying we should take the award from other players, but I'm saying if you're taking the Heisman Trophy from Reggie Bush for impermissible benefits, what about Cam Newton? I am not arguing for Cam Newton to have his Heisman Trophy taken away. Do not hear me incorrectly. But there's accusations there of impermissible benefits. You got Johnny Manziel outright telling you, hey, I got this amount of money for signing autographs when NIL wasn't legal. NCAA doesn't do anything. Heisman Trophy Trust doesn't do anything. They just let it ride. I'm not even going to touch the O.J. Simpson stuff, but I mean, if you're uncomfortable with impermissible benefits, I think the accusations there would make you much more uncomfortable. So this never made any sense. The fact that Reggie Bush is getting his Heisman Trophy back again is a win for everyone involved. The Heisman Trophy ceremony this December is going to be absolutely electric when that thing opens up. And it's either going to be Chris Fowler or Reese Davis on stage presenting the award and kind of hosting that thing. There's going to be a moment where they pan across the Heisman Trophy Trust. And you'll see Reggie Bush standing there. And I have to imagine that the camera will go to a one-shot pretty quickly, zoom in on him. Maybe they'll ask Reggie for a few of his thoughts on being back. And it's going to be just an eruption of an applause within that room. Going back to these people being embarrassed, notice now, Johnny Manziel, not that long ago, took a stand and said, hey, out of respect for my guy Reggie Bush and out of what I personally believe, I will not be standing on that stage with the rest of the Heisman Trophy Trust until he gets his Heisman back. So the Heisman Trophy ceremony, the Heisman Trophy powers that be, we're going to lose one of the most visible individuals in college football in the last couple of seasons from that stage because of something they would not do. And here's the thing now. Johnny Manziel wasn't going to be the last one. I promise you, Johnny Manziel would not have been the last individual to take a stand like that. I think it would have taken maybe a couple of seasons, but over the course of the next, I would say, 3 to 5 years, that would be a very empty stage. There would be very few people up there with the Heisman Trophy winners, and it would have been, again, embarrassing, a bad look, and something that these folks cannot stand. So overall, a win for Reggie Bush, a win for the Heisman Trophy, which is, I think, a good thing for college football. The real winners, though, the real winners here, a Nissan Heisman house. Like, the amount of content we're about to get out of the good folks at Nissan when Reggie Bush walks back up to the front door, and there's some, I don't know what the moment will be. Maybe it'll be him and Marcus Allen. Maybe it'll be him and Matt Leiner. I don't know what it's going to look like, but whenever they, you know, push Reggie Bush back into that fold of the Heisman house where he turns the key and walks into that living room, that's going to be television gold, and I personally cannot wait for it. So there we go. Common sense, getting a win. We love to see it. Reggie Bush, the Heisman, is back in his rightful possession. You love to see it. Golly, again, getting choked up talking about the Heisman, man. Few things make you emotional, but the Heisman Trophy is one of them. All right, the transfer portal may have been making you a little bit emotional depending on how it's impacted your roster. We got a couple of moves here happening. Guys are starting to narrow down their final schools. Now, we don't have as many commitments just yet, but I would expect over the course of this next week to 10 days, we're going to start to see the grand finale when it comes to this transfer portal cycle. As of 11:14 a.m. Eastern, this is all accurate. So if something ages here in the future, that's how the portal works. All right, make sure you're subscribed. As we get rolling here, running back Dylan Edwards from Colorado. This was something that we heard rumblings of, that he was going to enter the transfer portal. Actually ended up being a reality as of, I believe, yesterday, if not early this morning. 36 receptions last year for Colorado. Massive part of that offensive attack with Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. Like, you think back to that TCU game, Dylan Edwards made some big-time plays that ultimately allowed them to win that football game. The buzz from Pete Nakos, who, again, I would encourage you to follow on social media to make sure you're dialed in for all things portal, is that there was a mixture of feeling like he would like to be somewhere that runs the football a little bit more. I mean, Colorado was one of the lowest percentage of called run plays in the country last season, 40% run. They averaged 2.3 yards a carry as a team. So part of that is you didn't have an offensive line to run behind. Dylan Edwards says, hey, I played running back. I want to go somewhere where I can run the ball. Now, Pete Nakos also said that there is some intrigue around Dylan Edwards, maybe kind of fitting into that slot wide receiver mold. We'll see. He's a versatile player. We'll have a lot of options, I have to believe. Now, he's from the state of Kansas. And Avery Johnson won Twitter yesterday by throwing up a picture of him and Dylan Edwards from their Pop Warner days playing ball together. Dylan Edwards, it's also worth noting, was committed at one point in time to Kansas State before he ultimately ended up at Colorado. Was also at one point in time committed to Notre Dame. So keep an eye on that. Pete, as of yesterday, says Nebraska and Kansas are also some teams that are interested right now in his services. So Dylan Edwards, I think he's one of the best players available right now, one of the sneaky best players available. Going to be a massive addition to someone's roster here in the not-too-distant future. Damian Martinez is currently still in the transfer portal making decisions. Pete Nakos put in a pick for Damian Martinez to end up at Miami. Now, he was on the On3 Recruits channel yesterday, was Pete Nakos with Josh Newberg, and Josh asked him point blank. He said, Pete, is this done by the end of the week? Damian Martinez to Miami. Pete said, yep, I think so. To give you some background, Damian Martinez, running back from Oregon State, jumps in the portal, becomes the best player available, ran for 2,000 yards in 2 years in Corvallis. Dude is an absolute dog, and I think he fits really nicely with Miami from a schematic perspective. He wants to get north and south. Shannon Dawson wants to run the football, and from an attitude perspective. I just said, Damian Martinez, he runs angry. He runs violent. He's smooth, but he also does not shy away from contact. That is a big back delivering the blow when he gets downhill, like 220, 230. Not easy tackling him, all right? That fits exactly with who I think Mario Cristobal wants Miami to eventually evolve into, that physical enforcer kind of bully within the ACC and within the state of Florida. Speaking of running backs, Penny Boone has narrowed down his recruitment. Penny Boone, again, we talk about him a lot on this show because his name has continued to pop up in the winter transfer portal, transferred from Toledo to Louisville after being the MAC Offensive Player of the Year in 2023. Now he's back in the portal. I told you Louisville was on the table in terms of a return for him at some point in time. Does not look like that's the case. The report is, per Pete Nakos and Steve Wiltfong, that Georgia and Kentucky are the final two right now for him. Now, things can change. It's the portal. Things get weird. But the reality is, Georgia and Kentucky being those final two, I look at Georgia, and it'd be great to go to Georgia. It'd be great to run behind that offensive line. If you're Georgia, you would absolutely be fired up to take a Penny Boone. But that running back room is a little bit crowded. Roderick Robinson, Trevor Etienne. To me, Kentucky makes the most sense. And seeing Penny Boone play against his former team that he was at in Louisville at the end of the season, I would just add some more spice to that rivalry. Would be a very, very entertaining storyline, if nothing else. Another individual, another high-profile player, narrowing down his list of schools, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Penn State wide receiver, averaged 12 yards reception a season ago, was the most explosive player for my money at Penn State last season. He's down to Auburn and Texas A&M. A lot of schools were jockeying for his services. USC was being talked about at one point in time. West Virginia, I came out here earlier when he jumped in the portal and said they were a school that was getting traction early. Sounds like they're no longer in the mix. This would be an absolutely massive get for both Texas A&M and Auburn. For Texas A&M, it would kind of jumpstart the Mike Elko era. Noah Thomas looked great in that spring game. Connor Wegman, I think, is going to be a dude for you playing quarterback. If you want to maximize your offensive potential, you got to have multiple answers for your quarterback. I think Noah Thomas is going to be an answer, but you'll bring in Keandre Lambert-Smith and help Connor Wegman even more. That'd be massive. That'd be absolutely massive and would be a good deal for them as they get rolling there in College Station under the Mike Elko regime. Now, Auburn, I think, is very fascinating for a number of reasons. If you can give Peyton Thorne more help, just like I mentioned with Connor Wegman and their offensive structure at Texas A&M, you know you got one go-to guy in Cam Coleman. I know he's a true freshman. I know that the spring game is just a practice, but at the end of the day, man, all of our eyeballs work just fine when we watch that dude play ball. We know he's going to be a freak. We know he's going to be a guy day one they try to force feed the football to. You bring in a Keandre Lambert-Smith to help in some ways, I think, mentor him within that wide receiver room, a guy who's kind of been there, done that at a high level, played in Rose Bowls, scored long touchdowns in Rose Bowls, played against some really high level of competition in college football to help bring Cam Coleman along. I think that'd be huge, and I think offensively it would be another weapon for Hugh Freeze to utilize. I'm curious how much that factors into this recruitment, having an offensive mind as your head coach who is, from what we understand, more or less running the offense this year. I think that helps the pitch for Auburn, but again, we'll see. From what I've been told, NIL is going to factor heavily into this recruitment as well. Tyler Barron is back in the transfer portal officially. Now, Tyler Barron's had a fascinating last couple of months. Played at Tennessee last year. Good player, Tennessee. 6 sacks for the Vols. Transferred from Tennessee to Ole Miss. Then jumps back in the portal and transfers from Ole Miss to Louisville. Big win for the Cards, right? Now he is officially back in the portal looking for a new home. Very curious to see what the market is for Tyler Barron, because on one hand, you're saying, okay, why are we leaving all these schools? Why are we jumping from place to place to place in such a short period of time? Other part of this, he plays edge. He's been productive at a high level in the best conference in college football. I mean, hey, he's a premium position. You have a guy like Tyler Barron, there's no question about it. From a pure on-paper perspective, he makes your defense better. So we'll see who's in the running for a one Tyler Barron. Last guy I want to talk about here, this was one of the most elite social media recruitments, I think, or one of the most elite social media commitments that we've seen this point in the spring transfer portal. Orange Lutheran High School alum, shout out to the Lancers, Kyle Ford is transferring from UCLA back to USC, where he was previously when he committed there out of high school and played there for a number of years. Now, I think the reason, and again, I'm speculating here, have to believe that when he was at USC that first time around, that wide receiver room was a little bit more crowded, goes to UCLA, and now he's going back to USC. The reason why this commitment to me was so elite, he announced it on Twitter with Hayes Fawcett, as one does when they're a high-profile recruit at the high school or portal level, and he put a quote in there that says, "My bad, I was tripping the first time. I was tripping at first." He's back to USC. Obviously, kind of tongue-in-cheek with him transferring from his rival back to his original school, but it is what it is. Hey, I'll tell you what, man, this is a really talented player. I don't think he's seen the success that he's capable of just yet. He was a top 10 wide receiver in that class of 2019. 6'3", 220 pounds. That's a put-together wide receiver, man. You go over the middle, try and tackle Kyle Ford, like, you better bring your hard hat and lunch pails. That's not going to be an easy task. So curious to see his impact this upcoming year as they try and break in a new quarterback. I expect it to be Miller Moss, but nonetheless, Mekhi Lemon looked good in that spring game. They're going to have some guys throw the football to. Deuce Robinson, Kyle Ford, getting back in that offense. Someone who's familiar with it could be a tremendous asset for them as they move here into the fall. So the portal keeps rolling. Again, make sure you're subscribed. I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. It's kind of a slow burn. Not a ton of fireworks. Not a ton of, you know, mega names jumping in there. But even so, this transfer portal cycle, we'll say it one more time, it's about depth. It's about what you have in November. It's about armoring the car as best as possible so you can play your best when your best is required in those high-stakes games late in the year. Transfer portal is becoming more and more, man. Transfer portal is becoming a thing where it's not so much do you want to use it. It's like, hey, how are you going to use it? Clemson, we're looking at you, but neither here nor there. Speaking of the transfer portal, though, I kind of got to thinking about how we would use the portal if we were operating our own program here. And I kind of got to get this idea for the segment of what are the rules for success from where we're sitting to most effectively optimize the portal. And I want to give this disclaimer. There is nuance and context to every single situation that provides an exception to the rule, right? Like, no rule is just black and white. Every rule has some wiggle room. But with that being said, I think there's a couple of rules here that are just good landmarks to live by when it comes to how you utilize the talent acquisition mechanism that is the transfer portal. The transfer portal, this is the first rule, should be used as a side dish and not the meal. Okay, we want to live, if we're a successful college football program at the high school level when it comes to adding talent, for a number of reasons, but the most important is because we want to have the most solid foundation from top to bottom of guys that we're developing, guys that we're developing relationships with, guys that we're helping add to our culture and being solid throughout, guys that we're keeping on our roster for a number of years. We don't want to have to go to the portal every single offseason and add 20-plus guys so we can have a good football team the next year. Continuity is extremely underrated in college football, and the transfer portal obviously is not a tool that provides more continuity. It can help your football team, but it's not really the way that you want to live long-term when it comes to success at the highest level. We haven't seen it yet. It might happen in the future. We have not yet seen a team transfer portal in an entire roster and be able to go win a national championship in the next couple of years. We're watching Lane Kiffin with how that works. We're watching Louisville with how that works. We're watching Colorado very closely. And that's kind of the exception here. Like, we use this metaphor of, well, you don't want to just eat your side dish. You want to make sure you have an actual meal to go with it, right? But if you're starving, man, like I was in the office yesterday, forgot my lunch at home, and there's that little jar of Oreos we have in the kitchen. And I'm like 2 o'clock. It's starving. I haven't eaten anything. And so I'm like, hey, man, like I'm starving. This desperate times call for desperate measures. So I go to the jar and I probably eat legitimately like probably double-digit Oreos. If you're down bad, if your roster is deprived and you're starving for talent, you got to do what you got to do sometimes, man. You got to use the portal to be successful and to give yourself a chance in that upcoming season. Not a great routine to have, though. If you're eating Oreos for every meal because you're starving, another conversation for another time. Here's just a good principle for life, and it applies directly to the transfer portal as well. Don't work with crazy people. Don't do it. Don't work with crazy people. Culture is too important, and also there is no shortcut to having a great football team. I don't care how talented he is. If he's crazy and he's going to be a detriment to your locker room, it might be time to reevaluate how talented he really is. And that doesn't just go for the player. I think it also goes for the agent. If you got an agent that's asking for a ridiculous number, it's like, okay, well, where are your priorities really at? Is it about football or is it about making a quick buck? And if this player thinks it's a good idea to associate with this agent, who, again, is crazy, we don't need him on our roster. Sometimes, like, the bet ain't worth the hand, if you catch my drift there. So that's just a good rule for life. Culture, culture, culture. We had Dan Lanning on this show during the offseason. We're still offseason, quote unquote, but we had him on a few months ago. And he said, when I was a young coach, I thought that culture stuff was just sort of rah-rah. I thought it was just something that kind of sounded good. Thought it didn't really matter. Now, as I've become a head coach, I realize it's the only thing that does. Culture is important. Don't work with crazy people. Good rule for life. Next rule that we think is massive for success in the transfer portal: supply and demand dictate the market. Allocate your funds accordingly. Okay, for me, if I am in charge of my NIL piggy bank, I'm spending money on a couple of key positions. Quarterbacks, big boys in the trenches, offensive and defensive line. And this is a key one, that missing slash final piece to our roster to achieve what we want to achieve. Like, if you are one tight end away from having a team that you think can win the conference and compete for a national championship, all right, let's pony up and let's find a way to get it done. But more often than not, it is not wise, more than likely, to be spending near $1 million on a tight end. Just probably not good sense, right? And I love tight ends. I think they're enormous assets to have in the pass game if you can work them in the right way. But more often than not, and I'm using tight ends as an example here, you should spend your money on what's going to have the highest value placed on it from the market. Right now, the big defensive linemen, the offensive linemen, those are massive, massive pieces. There's not that many of them in the portal. If you need one, go pay for one. But don't overpay for something that you could get at a lower price point in a different point during the season. Season, I say, college football calendar, that winter portal window. Or maybe work with what you have on your roster and find a way to maximize that or in some ways compensate for that. Here's a big one we believe in, and we probably feel the strongest about this one out of all of our rules. Well, we feel pretty strong about don't work with crazy people. Here's one rule we feel pretty strong about. Don't take a starting quarterback for your football team in the spring transfer portal window. Now, same thing we said previously. Desperate times call for desperate measures. If you don't feel like y'all can score more than 14 points a game and your defense is abysmal and that's going to be the only way you have any way of even making a bowl game this upcoming season, let's talk about it. But more often than not, it is a losing effort to go to the transfer portal after you've had the most important 15 practices of your college football season and bring someone in to run the offense and be a leader of your football team. For the reasons I just mentioned, it's tough to get acclimated to a new scheme and a new playbook in that amount of time. It's also very difficult to be able to win over a locker room in that amount of time. Not saying it can't be done, but like you really build your culture and build your identity as a team, who your leaders are going to be, that is, during the hardest parts of your year, which the season is hard, don't get it twisted. Leaders step up in that way too. But during spring football, where guys are dinged up, tired, battered, bruised, and winter conditioning, where you are more often than not throwing up your breakfast at 6 a.m. with everyone on your team. That's hard stuff. That's where leaders step up and show who the real alphas are. More often than not, you'd like your alpha to be your quarterback. So that's how we feel about it. Peyton Thorne and Casey Thompson, two guys that came in post-spring. And we even talked to Hugh Freeze about this. He's like, Peyton Thorne missed spring practice last year. It showed. I think he's going to have a much improved production this upcoming season, in large part because he got those spring practices this year. Casey Thompson, it's tough to evaluate because he got hurt, but during the small sample size we had for him, he didn't necessarily have the best start to his season at FAU, a guy who transferred from Nebraska to FAU after spring practice. So don't take a starting quarterback in that second portal window. Don't know if one in the hand is worth two in the bush. That's the phrase we're looking for there. Last one to get to here when it comes to our spring transfer portal rules, or our transfer portal rules period. Make sure that everyone in your house is fed before you go shopping. Make sure that you have a proper attention to your current roster before you go out in the portal and try and add this player and that player and this player and that player. Because what you'll find is, more often than not, these guys that have a really strong season that maybe didn't have as much NIL earnings the previous year, it's like, hey, I did well at my job. I would like a raise. Let's sit down with them in the exit meeting. It's probably going to be annoying to a lot of coaches, probably be annoying to a lot of individuals that oversee the NIL and the roster side of things, but it's very important that we keep the guys that are on this roster, that we want to keep on this roster, let's give them what they're worth. Heck, let's give them more what they're worth, because continuity in itself, back to my point, continuity in college football is one of the most underrated factors for success. I truly believe that. You can have all the talent in the world, you can have the best coach in the world, but if you don't put it together properly, what do you really have? Just a lot of pieces. Continuity is one of the most effective strategies, one of the most effective tools to putting that talent together, and quite honestly, to bringing in new talent and helping other guys get acclimated and get up to speed and having that culture solidified. So to review for you here, our transfer portal rules for success are: the transfer portal should be enjoyed as a side dish. It should not be the main course. If you're starving, you can have a couple of Oreos, but it shouldn't be what you live on every single day for lunch. Don't work with crazy people. Agents, players alike, it's not worth it. Protect the culture. Don't take a transfer portal quarterback to be your starter if you missed all of spring practice. Really difficult to win the locker room. Really difficult to know the playbook. Also, supply and demand dictates the market. Let's make sure we're spending our money on things that are actually worth what we're spending them on, okay? If they're a missing piece, fine, but more often than not, let's be smart with our money here and spend it on quarterbacks and spend it on offensive and defensive linemen. Make sure everyone internally is happy before we go out and spend dollars on some new shiny toys that we can add to our offensive and defensive strategies. So let me know on Twitter and Instagram. This will be a fun one to hear from y'all. Let me know what your transfer portal rules are for success in your mind. That'll be fun, man. That was a fun one to put together, so I'm excited to hear the hear the responses there. All right, now we got a segment we've been doing here for the better part of really the last few months, and that is your unpopular takes that you would go to war for when it comes to how you feel about different topics across the college football landscape. And a friend of the show, consistently in the live chat, OG Gary, he says Alabama in 2024 is going to drastically fall off. He's got them going 8-4 or 9-3. Way to call your shot, OG Gary. We appreciate you being dialed in here. Hey, if you're new to the show, make sure you're subscribed. Thank you so much for doing that. Make sure you're following on Twitter and Instagram at Jody Pickell. Best way for us to involve you into the show is by getting at us on those platforms. So thank you for that. OG Gary calling a shot. I don't know. This is the craziest take of all time. And it sounds a little bit crazy when you hear it because you hear 9-3 and you're like, doesn't Alabama just like wake up with 10 wins when they roll into the season in late August, early September? They have previously. Now we understand. New regime. Nick Saban, gone to College Game Day. God bless him. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Kalen DeBoer taking over the operation in Tuscaloosa. And it's not just Nick Saban that left. It was also right around 66% of that defensive production from last year. So FanDuel actually is kind of in the neighborhood of what OG Gary is talking about here. He says FanDuel, or he says, and we also say by nature of checking it out, FanDuel, which FanDuel sponsored the show, FanDuel, to get to our point here, has the over-under win total in Tuscaloosa at 9.5. So OG Gary's calling it for 9-3. 9.5 isn't too far off that. Now, I think if this happens, it would be really surprising personally for me for a number of reasons. And the most obvious for me is like that talent level in Tuscaloosa, that talent level in Tuscaloosa is still extremely solid. Still extremely solid. Like Nick Saban, we've said it a couple times on this show, he did not leave the cupboard bare for Kalen DeBoer. Now, did some guys leave from the portal? Yeah, they're always going to leave via the portal every single offseason, no matter what school you are. But the guys that are left, just because they haven't played a ton of snaps just yet in Alabama, doesn't mean they weren't 4 or 5-star guys when they signed there out of high school. So if this does happen, if they fall in that 8-4 territory, it means that they had real struggles, I believe, on the defensive side of the ball. And those talented guys that we talk about a lot, your Zabian Browns, they probably had a tougher learning curve, and maybe, just maybe, that was the Achilles heel to the team. And the path to losing those games, I think, is interesting to look at, because let's just say that the secondary, the young secondary, they don't go to the portal where they need to, and they have struggles on the back end. It means that the games where they had a talent advantage from a top-to-bottom roster perspective, those matchups were the difference maker. So to me, I'm looking at, okay, who has a potentially really solid quarterback and who has a deep wide receiver room that could take advantage of some mismatches that may or may not be available in this situation we're living where Alabama somehow goes 8-4. I'm looking at the games at Tennessee, Nico Imaliava. We went and saw that wide receiver room in person. They're deep as heck. Oklahoma, they're in Norman for this one. This will be Oklahoma's first swing at Alabama in the SEC. Have to believe that that place will be rocking. Jackson Arnold, I thought he showed some good things during the spring game. Deion Burks looked phenomenal. They're deep at wide receiver. Jahlil Farouk, Andrew Anthony. I could keep going here. They got some dudes in that wide receiver room. And then LSU, it's at LSU. Garrett Nussmeier is going to sling the ball around the yard. Deep wide receiver room there as well, in my opinion. If they were to somehow go 9-3, 8-4, those games I'm keeping an eye on for the reasons I just mentioned, quarterback play, wide receiver room. But the most losable games, I think, are Georgia, even though it's in Tuscaloosa, best roster in America, and it's Kirby Smart. Okay, so that's, in my opinion, I think it could be your most losable game on the schedule at LSU. Just mentioned Garrett Nussmeier. Just mentioned that wide receiver room. We talk about quarterback play and how it can hurt Alabama, but even with that being said, Brian Kelly, you know what he's going to bring to the table. The last time they were in Death Valley, it was at night. I have to believe it'll be the same deal for LSU. I mean, if they don't make that a night game, we don't have Herb Street Fowler on the call. What are we doing? So that'll be electric. That'll be tough. And then who knows with a couple of these other games, man. Like Auburn, I don't expect Auburn to be favored over Alabama when they play. But even so, like, it's Auburn. Weird stuff happens. Doesn't matter what their record is. For either side, it's going to be a weird game. That one is at Bryan Denny, so probably helps things. And then any of those road games I just mentioned where you play a good quarterback. 8-4 to me would be very surprising. Like 9-3, you could talk yourself into Georgia, talk yourself into LSU, and then they play Missouri too, and that could be interesting with Missouri probably being a top 10, if not fringe top 10 team this upcoming season. 8-4 would mean the offense really struggled. 8-4 would mean that the Kalen DeBoer, Jalen Milroe marriage did not go as planned, and things just totally spun out of control. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think when you look at what Alabama's going to be in 2024, will the defense take some time? I'm going to go ahead and say yes. A lot of youth, new system, trying to get everyone on the same page defensively is just, it's tough, especially when you have guys that haven't played a lot of college football just yet. That might take a little bit of a minute. But offensively, I think Alabama is going to be in position to win some shootouts. Call me crazy, but I've been saying this really for the better part of the last week and a half. I think Jalen Milroe and Kalen DeBoer are going to do numbers like Good Will Hunting. I really believe that because when we talked to Kalen DeBoer, he was very adamant, like, we need to make sure we involve Jalen Milroe with his legs. Like, he's special. He's different because of that. We got to make sure that we bake that into our offensive scheme. And then the way they're going to set him up for success pre-snap, they're not going to ask Jalen Milroe to be Peyton Manning back there. They're not going to ask him to make these high-level NFL throws where he layers it over a linebacker, fits it in a tight window. No, they're going to set him up for success pre-snap, try and confuse the defense, get them off balance, give him easy access throws, get him in rhythm, take some shots deep, and Jalen Milroe does a great job taking shots deep as well. He's phenomenally efficient in that category. So overall, man, I think Alabama 9-3, you could maybe talk me into if they struggle early on for whatever reason, but I really think that I probably right now would lean closer to 10-2. We'll see where we are when we get to August and we have our win-loss record prediction, but 8-4, tough to sell me on. 9-3, I could see it, and FanDuel could see it as well. But again, bottom line, I think Alabama is not going to have some massive drop-off, and I think Jalen Milroe and Kalen DeBoer will be magic in every single sense of the word. I'll slip this in there too. I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Milroe was a Heisman Trophy finalist. There, we said it. We said it. We said it, and it's April, and definitive statements coming out in April is never really a good thing, but we're going to go ahead and have it out there on the record as we sit here on April 24th. One more unpopular take we got from y'all. Frisky Dingo, great username. He says, Ohio State lacks true quarterback one play. He says that will be what prevents them from ultimately winning it all. Room full of good quarterbacks and young quarterbacks with a lot of potential, but no clear-cut guy. Again, this is his unpopular take in the college football space that he is willing to go to war for, and we appreciate you bringing it to the table, brother. I understand your thought process. I really do. Because you got some young bucks in there, right? And they're probably not starting for you. Like, if Julian Sain, as good as we've heard he's been behind closed doors, ends up starting football games for Ohio State at some point during the year, something's probably gone wrong. Aaron Nolan, same deal. Talented guys, Lincoln Kienholz, Devin Brown, I've actually defended pretty publicly here for a little bit. I think he's got a lot of juice, just haven't seen him have a chance to really put it together yet. Got injured in the bowl game. Will Howard's your guy. He hasn't been named the starter. Ryan Day is not going to name the starter, I don't imagine, until August by nature of how he does things. Will Howard's your guy. That's my opinion. And I believe Will Howard is going to start at quarterback, and I think he's going to have more than enough to be successful for this football team. And let's kind of take a step back. Let's look at the numbers. Kyle McCord last year started at quarterback, led Ohio State to 11-1 record. His numbers were 24 touchdowns passing, 6 interceptions. Will Howard, a season ago, ran for 9 touchdowns, threw for the same amount of touchdowns, and had 10 interceptions. So he had 24 passing, 9 rushing, had 10 INTs. That factors in a really ugly game against Oklahoma State where he threw 3 interceptions, was much better during the last month of the season. The major caveat here, when you compare Will Howard and Kyle McCord, is Will Howard is going to have the best circumstances he's ever had playing quarterback at the collegiate ranks. And we said that about DJU yesterday, but I think it's absolutely true when you evaluate these guys. If that was good enough last year, more or less, with what Will Howard brought to the table to get the same result as Ohio State had, going 11-1, losing to Michigan, it is what it is, then what happens when you drop him into a situation where he's got the best play caller he's ever had in Chip Kelly, that's going to be creative offensively, they're going to run the football because they got the best backfield, I believe, in America, with Quinshon Judkins, Trevian Henderson, best playmakers around him. Emeka Ebuka is a 1,000-yard receiver when he's healthy. Jeremiah Smith is something of like a legend already in Columbus, hasn't even played a real game yet. Best defense, I think you can make an argument, one of the best, if not the best defenses preseason in America. Bring back everybody from last year's unit. You'll be solid up front. You add in Caleb Downs, who was the best player in the transfer portal from Alabama. Like, they're going to be really, really good top to bottom. And that's only going to elevate Will Howard. Because you hear so much about, you know, what quarterbacks don't do in specific places. But, like, I think the comp is extremely fair to say you could take a quarterback that had a similar level of play at another place with less talent around him, drop him into a more talented situation with a you know, again, better offensive setup, in my opinion, with Chip Kelly, why can't he have more success? Why can't he elevate his play for what they're going to be in 2024? I see the correlation when you say Kyle McCord and Will Howard are similar players. They are, but they aren't, because Will Howard's played a lot more football. Will Howard's much more mobile. And I think that Will Howard is cut exactly right for this kind of situation. The reason why I disagree it's going to be what prevents them from winning a national championship is because I don't think they're going to ask Will Howard to be the lead actor in this movie. Now, he might play a strong supporting role. He might be that number two actor. But overall, man, make no mistake about it, the way that Ryan Day has evolved as a head coach, the way Ohio State has evolved as a team, they are now a defensive-led football team. And last year, if you got a little more juice offensively, who knows what happens if you have a better quarterback last season. But, like, they are going to be a defensive-led football team going forward. And when we look at what teams have done to win national titles, that's kind of been a successful formula to go with. Like, the last three starting quarterbacks, I understand that they have gotten a lot of praise, gotten a lot of accolades, but statistically, they haven't lit the world on fire. J.J. McCarthy, I love the guy. He's going to go be a top five draft pick, it sounds like, tomorrow night. 22 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Physical outfit, ran the football, played great defense. I know Ohio State fans don't want to hear the comp to Michigan, but that might be a lot closer to the formula this upcoming season. Not identical, but similar. The last two seasons before that, Stetson Bennett. Now, he was also a Heisman Trophy finalist in 2022. He played a larger role in 2022. We absolutely will admit that. He accounted for 37 touchdowns. Reminder, Will Howard had 33 touchdowns last season in total. Stetson Bennett threw for 4,000 yards. So I understand he played a massive role, but that was, again, a defensive-led football team, in my opinion, for a lot of different points during the year. Now, he definitely elevated them, but Stetson Bennett in 2022 did what was asked of him. But there was other guys around him that made him better, similar to Ohio State this upcoming season. In 2021, Stetson Bennett actually threw more touchdowns, far less yards, but that was a defensive-led operation. So I'm not trying to take anything away from a Stetson Bennett or a J.J. McCarthy or somehow water down their performances, but I think when you look at Will Howard and what it will take to be successful at Ohio State, it's not going to be a thing where you ask him to put the cape on every single Saturday to go win the ball game for you. Will there be plays? Will there be drives where, hey, Will, we need this first down, brother. Hey, Will, it's fourth and goal for the game. In Columbus, against Michigan, we need this one. On the road against Oregon, we need this one. There's absolutely going to be those moments. But I think the calling card for Ohio State, the strong hand of this football team, is going to be the defense and what they have in that backfield. So it'll still be, I think, a more exciting offense with Chip Kelly. I think it'll be a more wide-open offense with Chip Kelly. But I don't think it's going to be a, hey, get on my back kind of effort from Will Howard from the win at all. So I see the thought process there. I think what we saw in the spring game is going to be better in the fall. I don't think that's the end-all, be-all just yet. I don't think it's the final product just yet. But regardless, the best part about college football, man, is we get to find out here when they actually play games. So roll, party, roll for that, man. We got one more. I lied. We actually have one more unpopular take here, which just parlays perfectly into our last segment I want to get to. We had one of y'all call your shot and say, Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson, greater than sign, Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Fowler, which was a bold play. And I love, I mean, that's what we asked for. We asked for y'all to swing your sword and take your shot, and that's exactly what you did. And it sort of got me to this question where I was like, well, who are the best college football broadcast crews when you're watching games on Saturday? Again, this does not include the digital media people that we have a ton of respect for here. Obviously, everyone at On3, from Josh Newberg, Phillip Dukes, Steve Wiltfong, Andy Staples. Like, I could go down the list here for all the people at On3 that I'm massive fans of. Josh Pate, big fan of his. Will Compton, he's on a spring tour right now, busting with the boys. They're doing a bunch of awesome conversations. Brooks Austin, shout out Brooks Austin, Film Guy fam. Ty Hayes, I could keep going here for all the folks in the digital space I'm a fan of. But when we talk about broadcast crews, I think it really is just a matter of, like, hey, what do you like? You know, like, what's your preference with what you want to go with your game? Because I don't think it's like a better or superior when it comes to the broadcast crews. I asked for the take, so we got the take. Like, Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler, you hear them call a game. If calling a college football game was a genre of music, they're like an orchestra. Like, it's familiar, it's soothing, it's seamless, it's smooth. You hear Chris Fowler call the game or a call a final game-winning play, and it just has like a little bit of just classicness to it. Kirk Herbstreit, when he's calling the game and he's doing the color commentary, it's like you're watching the game with someone that you know. Like he's walking you through things in a very friendly manner. Just familiar, soothing. I would call that the orchestra. Now, when Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson call a college football game, you got them on the big noon game, obviously. It's like your favorite band or your favorite artist. Like there's going to be some hits that you recognize when Gus Johnson is popping off because Travion Henderson's down the sideline and he is going in just full Gus Johnson mode in only the way that Gus Johnson can. Down the sideline, Travion Henderson! Like that was even just a poor attempt at doing Gus Johnson, but you hear what I'm saying. Like that in itself, it's familiar, it's a hit, you know it when you hear it, special just to them. Joel Klatt, when you hear him talk about college football, he also does a podcast, which I think is tremendous. When you hear him talk about college football, you just feel more intelligent about the sport. Like he breaks it down in such an intricate and detailed manner to where I'm like, I feel like I could almost visualize the things he's talking about with no television. I can understand what he's talking us through when he's doing the color commentary. Massive X factor for the folks that are a big fan of the big noon kickoff. Jenny Taft, sideline reporter, goated. I think she's the best in the game. Now, I'm a little bit biased because I interned for Fox for a period of time on Undisputed, and she was hosting it back then. I shadowed her at one point in time. She's phenomenal. Wrote me a letter of recommendation, actually, as well. I think she's the best at what she does, so I'll just leave that there. Sleeper here, Greg McElroy and Sean McDonough are elite. Elite, elite. Like, Greg McElroy might be one of the most intelligent football minds, period. Like, whenever we got him on this show at different points, he just has so many things to say about the interworkings of a football play or an offense or a coaching strategy. And we saw him at the college football playoff rankings this year, and he was just like dialed in, had reasons behind every single thing that he was saying, very academic in his approach to it. McDonough just has an iconic voice. Like you hear him call something, it just feels big time. Just feels like it's something that is a major production. It doesn't matter what the game is. But that's kind of the thing I want to get back to. Like, really, when it comes down to your broadcast crew that you prefer, it's like a buffet. You know, it's just like, what do I feel like today? Now, obviously, what you feel like today depends on what's on the menu, because if Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler are calling a game and you're a Georgia Bulldog fan and they're calling your game, you're like, okay, great. I'm watching them. If you're an Ohio State fan, Joel Klatt, Gus Johnson got the game. We're watching Ohio State. We got them on the TV. And so on and so forth with Greg McElroy, Sean McDonough. RG3 does a great job. Number of crews here. But what I want to make sure we get to is I think that there is a lot of really good crews out there. And your preference is totally, you know, you're entitled to your opinion. But I personally, I think it's all about what you're in the mood for and what your ear likes to hear. No bars intended there, but bars nonetheless. All right, Nick, I didn't tell you this prior to, but we got a little bit of time. Let's hit a little rapid fire here, three questions. What do you say? That's not a very smooth intro for you, but Nick Brake joining the show. What's up, baby?
Oh, man. I actually didn't anticipate coming on today. Hold on 1 second, guys.
No, you're good. I didn't really intro you in very smoothly there.
Sorry, I'm just...
No, you're good. Chat's bumping. We got to bring Musburger back and Lundquist. Dude, Vern Lundquist... when he was on the call, that's when we totally skipped over to Gary Daniels. It's kind of a bad job. I really like Gary personally. I think he's great. I also associate him with big time college football games. Ian Eagle also, or is it Noah Eagle? Who's the young buck on NBC?
Noah
Eagle. Ian Eagle is his father.
Yeah.
Mr. Eagle is his father.
Dan Ian Hicks Eagle, he does a great is doing job. Notre Dame games this year.
What'd you say? Golf.
Dan Hicks is joining NBC's Notre Dame coverage.
Oh, no kidding.
He's a great Golf Channel guy.
Is it Jason Garrett who did the games with Eagle? They were pretty good.
No, he did.
They did the spring game.
Jack Collinsworth games Jack with Notre Dame. But he did do a few games with Eagle.
I see Sandman say RG3 is cringe.
I'm not muted, my friends.
He is a little bit. He is a little bit sometimes, but like after a while, you're like, okay, that was actually a pretty witty assessment of what's going on. So yeah. I understand it's like... it's like hot sauce. You either like hot sauce or you don't like hot sauce. I don't think there's people that are indifferent to RG3. I personally think he's pretty good at what he does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, he played football at a high level. We got anything in the chat here, Nick? Anything that the folks are fired up about?
Yeah, a couple things. Neon King says, JD, do you think stadiums should be full for spring games?
Yeah, dude, why not? Fill them up. We talk about the care factor a lot on this show with NIL and the way that that factors in and the way that, you know, how you can now essentially give money to talent acquisition. You want to go that extra mile, fill the stadium up, looks good for recruits, helps, you know, get the real buzz in the air for maybe that five-star that's visiting just for the spring game. So I like filling up the stadium for a spring game. I understand not everyone's going to be there for it, and it's hard to do, but if you can get it done and you can create a game-like atmosphere, it also probably helps your on-field product because you get another rep at what it's like playing in a big-time environment. So I personally am like, as long as there's 11-11 being played, if we can get people into the stadium, let's do it. Let's make it free, too. Let's not be weirdos. Let's make it free to watch practice. But
yeah,
that's how I feel. I got a lot of thoughts on that, but that's how I feel about it.
JD, Jared Stidham says, what do you think we should learn about Oregon this weekend?
First time seeing Dylan Gabriel throw it around, man. I say this for a lot of different quarterbacks with guys that have transferred to new spots. How do they look comfort-wise in the system? I think Jeff Lebby, it's not similar to what they're running at Oregon, but I think the spread concepts that they have there should allow him to have a fairly seamless transition. How seamless is that transition, and how far along are we in that transition during the spring game? I'm really excited to watch that. Also, Evan Stewart, do we see him make a few plays in the spring game, go up and get it? The Evan Stewart-Dylan Gabriel connection. If I'm an Oregon fan, I just want to see one touchdown. Just one touchdown. Doesn't matter if it's a slant. Doesn't matter if it's a check down. I just want to see one touchdown from Dylan Gabriel to Evan Stewart, and we'll talk about that more on tomorrow's show for our final round three spring game things we're watching. We got Colorado, Nebraska, Oregon being one of them. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, but Evan Stewart, Dylan Gabriel touchdown would be music to my ears. I'm an Oregon fan.
Okay. Adam says 1-10. What do you rate Harbaugh's tattoo?
I liked it. Did you see this, Nick? It says 15 no, and 0.
I didn't.
It's got the M. The M is a little bit wiry, you know, like it's definitely an M. It's definitely in the similar font, but it like, I don't know that I would know it was a Michigan M if I had just like that letter isolated. So I liked it. I loved the heart behind it. The fact that he's like, I'll get a tattoo if we go 15-0. Mm-hmm. Go 15-0. True to his word. Gets a tattoo. All that was awesome. Jim Harbaugh is a program guy through and through. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But the execution, maybe we go back through that, coach, make that M a little bit more blocky. Maybe we fill it in with some yellow just to make sure there's no confusion. But overall, you can't hate the heart behind it. And it's the thought that counts when you get tattoos, right?
I guess
the thought that counts.
Yeah.
Nick, you got a pretty big chest tattoo.
I do not.
Prove it.
I will. I will prove it.
No, I'm just kidding.
JD, let's end on this.
I love it.
Adam once quotes Gus Johnson in the chat. I want to hear if you could quote this verbatim. It's about barbecue.
Oh, man. So Denzel, I forget who they were playing. Was it Oklahoma? Might have been Oklahoma.
It's with, oh, gosh. It says with
Nebraska?
The most popular quote is with the Burks. We all know it.
Yeah.
It says, quote, you got my barbecue back there. Didn't invite me.
So Denzel, this is great. So Denzel Burks, who was at Ohio State, for those that don't know, go YouTube this clip after the show ends because it's phenomenal. Go YouTube. That's such a funny way to say something.
Pretty
like
old
that.
Way.
Go search it on YouTube. How about that? Denzel Burks, back there playing DB for Ohio State, young Denzel Burks, I believe. Someone comes across the middle. I'm forgetting who they were playing, but he just absolutely cleans this dude's clock. And Gus Johnson gives an all-time kind of call and just the only the way that Gus Johnson can, but I'll try here. He goes, Denzel Burks had barbecue back there. Didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings. And there was a part where you're watching it where you're like, I have no idea what he means. No idea what he's talking about with barbecue, but this is awesome, and it fits perfectly with this moment. And in that moment, a legendary call was born. And I believe after that, they had to sub in, oh gosh, I'm forgetting the other corner's name. Okuda had to get subbed in for him, and he ended up being a first-round draft pick. So it all worked out, but yeah, what an iconic call. Appreciate Adam dropping in the chat, man, and
yep.
Allowing me to embarrass myself a little bit here on our Wednesday live show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. Nick, you're the man.
I appreciate it.
Any big Wednesday plans? Is today kickball?
Yes.
How we feel? Feel good?
Feel good. Sandman is no longer my pal, by the way.
Man, okay.
No, I'm kidding.
There's beef?
No, there's not. Just obsessed with this muted thing.
They're just, hey, they're just, they're taking their shots, you know? Shoot or shoot.
Sandman also has two YouTube channels that he comes in and comments in the same show.
Really?
Both Sandman, just a different profile picture.
How about it, man? Sandman, just making his presence felt. Which we obviously, if you have more than one YouTube channel, tune into the Hard Count on both. That'd be tremendous.
Bring your burners.
And make sure you bring your burners. BYOB, bring your own burner, right?
Yep.
Good stuff. Nick, you're the man. Appreciate it, brother. Good luck tonight.
Thank you. You too.
That is the man, Nick Brake. Rolling with the punches, making it all happen, keeping tabs on the live chat, punching the show. We appreciate y'all being a part of this, man. Appreciate y'all making college football a year-round sport, because it absolutely is. The portal says so. High school recruiting says so. Spring games say so. You say so. We say so. And we're glad that you do that and make this college football community what it is. Subscribe to the channel on your way out. We are back tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, talking through what we're looking at in the spring games coming up this weekend. Going to be a lot of fun. And we love y'all. We're grateful for y'all. We don't take a second of this for granted. We're going to keep this party rolling. We will see y'all next time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.